All right. So we thought that we would turn the convention of a documentary on its head. Because when you think documentary, you think, I spent 2 years in the wilderness researching the mating habits of African elephants. And I interviewed every elephant expert in the world. And you do all this exhaustive background research so that then you put together the documentary based on all this research and input that you've, you know, developed. But we thought we'd use social data and flip that process on its head. So through some sort of contest, we would select a person, and that person would be the subject of this documentary. But there'd be no interviews, there'd be no let's talk to their mom, let's talk to their best friend, let's talk to their husband or wife. All of the information that would go into this documentary of this person's life would be pulled from their social data presence. So it would be pulled from their Facebook page, from their LinkedIn, from their Pinterest, from their blogs, from their YouTube channel. And the video editors and the documentary developers would develop a narrative and tell this person's story to the audience without ever interviewing the person themselves. So that's our idea. And I'm under the time limit.
And it's a nice flow.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think of all the photos and the videos that people post online. You could construct an entire narrative without ever actually interviewing the person. You could talk about their professional life, about their friends, about their upbringing, about their passions, their hobbies, all through the footprint that you've left digitally.
And then after you have carefully created that thing, then maybe at the end, you actually bring the person in.
Yeah, exactly.
Hand it over to somebody.
Who's next?
I hear ticking. I think this table really wants to go.
Okay.
Save.
So I think I'm a bit confused about what the question is after I just heard that one, because I thought that it was a different question. But I would say that the biggest influence, if I think about myself, that social data has had is going back to being kind of 13 years old and signing onto Napster at, you know, kind of like 1 a.m., sneaking downstairs, putting a pillow over the dial-up so my parents didn't hear. And going onto forums and, as a British person, talking to Americans about a band that was on a tape that I'd found in a class at school, and then looking at the music that they had in their libraries, and all of a sudden discovering a whole world that I wouldn't have had accessible to me without Napster, and seeing that honestly as like the defining moment in my life as to who I am today. And from music to meeting people, from the internet and Napster, having a real passion for kind of like connection and online, and how basically I could probably stem my entire life back to the moment I decided to sign on to Napster at 2 a.m. and talk to Americans about punk rock. And I think that you could honestly do a documentary about how music online has influenced and changed people's lives and really kind of given them directions and journeys of where they've gone to today. So that's.
Great. I mean, I could immediately think about two stories about my life. One was when I was a fresh grad student at Stanford, and I went to the library and discovered chat rooms. The other one was then, you know, when I was a postdoc, I needed to go to Singapore. And they didn't have Airbnb then. So I posted in one of these news groups. And a friend of mine, Lee Teng Kiat, who really became a wonderful friend of mine in the future, he just wrote back and said, I can get you a room at the university, but you have to promise to really actually show up. And so I think good story. And I think many people probably resonate. Any comments? So now I know that team wants to go next, because they came up to me and said, We want to go next. Here you are.
Check. Yeah. What's that? Reset the timer. And
you get more time if you
go. Check. Unlike most of you, I came of age in a time before the internet and before Facebook, before email, anything like that. And so when you left high school, you left. You didn't have any way to keep in touch with people except if you had their address. And the same thing was true in college. The same thing was true in grad school. So the people that you really cared about, you knew because you found their address or your parents had their address, and you kept in touch with them. But over time, things drift away. And they were not only just lost addresses, they were lost people. You really believed that you would probably never see them again unless you came back for reunion. And there was no way to know their day-to-day life. And so an interesting thing happened to me earlier this year when a community popped up spontaneously on Facebook where people I knew from childhood and high school began to spontaneously reconnect around memories. And I can see some of you are nodding, but the profound thing about it at my age is I really truly believe that I would never hear from Dan Thrasher or Teresa Webb or any of those people ever, ever again. And suddenly I found out that I had a ton in common with them. And it was like a conversation had been entirely missed over 25 years that I had not been part of. And it's quite profound. And I think it's a little bit different than the way my high school age children perhaps will go through life, where they'll never really lose touch because they'll always be able to dip into that conversation and dip back out. It was a 20-year conversation that I didn't know happened. And there was a phrase coined in our group about ambient friendship, that it just is happening and you can dip in and out of it. I thought it was a great phrase. But what happened, that's kind of a sad side to the story, is we were all using Facebook to reminisce and connect about particular events and memories and ideas. And then the high school age kids that are living there now in my small town, they began to co-opt and ultimately corrupt that experience, because instead of talking about what happened, they started to talk about what was happening in their lives. And one by one, all of those friends that had come together began to fade away and drop out. And we didn't ever really friend each other. We just looked at the community. And now that memory has sort of drifted away. And it was a great moment in time. But the community still exists, but it's all the high school kids that are there now. Good movie?
There's a lot of things that you can relate to.
Hi. So our story, as we started just talking about all our stories, we kind of realized how social data has really, I think, just captured the randomness and interconnectedness of life, right? Like, we all know that, you know, the second we friend someone, what's most interesting about it is the friends you might already have in common from completely different, you know, random walks of life. So it's kind of that whole 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing has now just shrunk to 2 degrees, where everyone's just connected by, you know, like 2 degrees out, you know, LinkedIn tells us. We all know pretty much the whole world now through, you know, you always know someone that can introduce you. So we thought, wouldn't it be great to tell a few of those stories where you almost start out not know, you have no idea how these people are connected, but you know a few of their stories. And we have some crazy life-changing ones just in this group. Like, you know, people obviously have gotten jobs from it, or, you know, when tragedy strikes and, you know, some people can band together. I had a friend of mine who found out through Facebook that her boyfriend was leading a double life. Like, literally, you know, he had two girlfriends, but his privacy settings were set very, very well, so that, you know, she would never see the pictures of him with this other person. And I mean, it was, you know, that kind of insane stuff. So if you can, you can imagine this documentary where you're not sure, you don't know, you know, you can hear it from the guy's perspective, and he's telling it kind of in a positive light, where, like, I'm really good at setting my privacy settings. And then on the flip side, finally you realize that, oh, that, you know, on the other end is a person with a life that, you know, and we are kind of all connected in these crazy random ways. And so social data has allowed us to actually understand what those random ways are, and that, you know, they're not so random anymore.
Do you want to make it more concrete a bit? Besides the double boyfriend story?
Well, it's a story.
Oh, yeah. And so the other stories throughout, you know, we have people who didn't really know each other that well at all offline, but because you know, through online connections, they were able to, you know, recommend one for a job, and then obviously changed their lives. And so, it, you know, I think again, it's just, it brings us all together in a way that you could never just do offline, because it makes clear what the nature of our connections are, and uses just people as that connective tissue to each other that, you know, just makes us all feel not so kind of random anymore. And I think just tying it up in the end, where the whole time you're watching, you have no idea how these people are connected, and then it finally starts kind of, you know, solving that puzzle of, yeah, even it just brings it back to all the people at this table, you know, and how you're all connected just through, again, randomly through a conference, being seated together, but yet we can find connections. And I'm sure, you know, if we all friended each other right now, we would know a lot of the same people through random things.
Good. Kevin Kelly said that we live in this amazing time where we, the world, got connected once forever, irreversibly so. So, good. And if you don't mind writing one person for each group, writing their sort of email behind the group number, that way if you want to track somebody down, we can afterwards. And to the next team. Who wants to be next? Okay.
Let's stand this way. Okay, so when we were talking about social networks, and I guess it's this probably wouldn't make a good like documentary in itself, just because of the nature of the tone that it would portray. But we started talking about the permanence of all of that online data that's being recorded. Yeah, and you could probably imagine where we go with that. That there's so much permanence in leaving a legacy about what we buy, what we like, who we're friends with, and all these pictures. And you know, Facebook has imagined that to be a timeline, right? So that we can go back and look at our childhood someday and see all those pictures of the people that we used to know. But there's no game over button, right? There's no button where you can press where you're like, I checked into like the grave, you know? I mean, yeah, we're gonna go there. But that's, the social networks online are permanent, and our lives are not. And so we're leaving this legacy, whether we like it or not, we're leaving this legacy online. And there's a beautiful thing that happens when someone abruptly passes away. And Megan and I both have examples from this in our own lives of someone on Facebook that we know maybe dying in a car crash or something like that. And their Facebook profile becomes a social gravestone where everyone who's ever known that person gets the ability to share their thoughts with other people who also knew that person, sharing pictures, sharing, you know, old stories, and really commemorating that person's life in a way that could never have happened before the internet and before social networks. So, yeah.
I have a friend who actually was an emergency medic, and he was sitting in his bed in the East Bay with his brother, just chatting. And they happened to have a gun, which they thought was not loaded. And he pulled the trigger and shot himself dead. And it's just amazing. I mean, we had a bunch of friends in common. How people, you know, still he lives on Facebook, and people say, oh, from his grave, he would so much enjoy the sunset tonight, and they take a picture and post it to them.
Yeah.
So who has the experience of someone who passed on, and then social media made a difference compared to what it would have been 20 years ago? That's about half of the room. Thank you.
Who's next?
Again, if you can pass the piece of paper sort of lagging behind the microphone, and you can pass the microphone to the next table. Thank you.
So we were actually talking about something similar to that, that how through social networks and online, you really experience the big events, not just the random events. And it's interesting on that note, we were talking about how now a lot of people are putting their Facebook accounts on their will, just so other people, you have to have like a content manager for all your identity. But talking about big events, they're making me share my story, which is slightly embarrassing.
of love, I guess. I was on, or my older sister was on, a free online dating site. So I was kind of nervous for her and decided that I should check it out to make sure what she was doing. And was really bored watching The Bachelor or something one night. So I filled out my profile, and how it works, it's called OkCupid, and you have to answer a bunch of questions about yourself, and that they'll start matching you based on personality and things that you have in common. It'll ask about religion and politics, lifestyle, hobbies, all of that stuff. There's, you could go on forever. I was just bored at work one day and clicking away. And it matches you, like, say, I'm a Democrat, and that's really important to me. If it's not important, I can say it's not important. So they'll match you based on your priorities. I never thought I would ever meet someone through online dating. I'm still extremely young and very terrified of that. But there was one guy, and as I kept answering questions, he went from like 90% match to 93% match to 99% matched. And I was like, okay, 99% match, that's absurd. And you can check it throughout the whole country. And we were actually, he was the only person that I had 99% match with. So I ended up meeting in person. My roommates came with me, thank God. Thank you. And we've been dating ever since. And it's crazy because having that social data and realizing I had answered about 256 questions, and he knew that we answered 253 questions similarly. So his dad now calls me 253, actually, which is very awkward. But it worked, and that social data made us have that base, and even though we've only been together for 4 months, it feels like 4 years just because we knew so much about each other going into it.
So. Amazing. Thank you. While the green piece of paper is passing to her, it's interesting how this is about explicit data, what you did, that you actually fill out that profile in OkCupid. In social data, there's also the implicit component. Remember the geolocation story from the beginning? And it's interesting how I think on those dating apps that use geolocation, people are simply more truthful. Because, you know, if you are here tonight, 2 miles away, and tomorrow it's 7 miles, the day after tomorrow it's 15, and then it's again 3, then it doesn't really build the trust that you are claiming your home night after night. So I think it's just people know how they're moving around, and when they're close to each other, and that implicit, like what you said, he said, ambient friendship. So that sort of, in the background, knowing what's going on with that person, I think it does build trust. And that's why Viking.com/itinerary. I have my location, so, you know, it is not just saying, oh yeah, I'm almost there if I haven't even started my car yet. Good, thank you.
So another true story here. I'm a little bit different. I am born and raised in Shanghai for 20 something years. Then I flew all the way here to LA, and then now in Shanghai, China. Yeah, 15 hours away. And now I live in LA for 3 years. So I have all those like Facebook, Twitter account in US, and I also am on all those Chinese version of Facebook and Twitter. So if you see I go to work every day, I first like open Facebook, Twitter, all those pages, and also the Chinese versions of these on my web browser. So it actually, the biggest benefit of social media for me is that it extended my life from 24 hours to literally like 48 hours. I am living in like two different worlds, 15 hours away. It's not like two identities, but I'm living in two worlds. And my friend Amanda, my office mate, and she actually once said, "What, you still have friends in China?" I'm like, "Of course, like I'm still popular over there, because if like I cannot be physically close to them, I still can keep up with what's going on there. And if like once a year I go back, I say, hey, I'm in town, who's up for a party? Like 100 people will show up." So it's like, this is like the change of my life. It's like possible for you to still maintain friends with like that. Those are the people of like a very important part of me, like friends and family over there, like from my childhood for 23 years, and I don't want to lose them. And they like these social media enabled me to do so, and now I also have friends here in the US, so it's awesome.
short video I did with Wang Zhangshuo, who is the CEO of Baixinhuang, and that's sort of Chinese Craigslist, if you will. And we talked about whether Chinese people and Western people are actually, whether we want to emphasize the difference. Say, oh, Westerners are XYZ, Chinese people are ABC, versus similarities. And Wang Zhangshuo makes this point in his experience of running Craigslist in China, that actually the similarities by far are more important than the differences. However, it's very interesting that Sina Weibo, which is sort of a mix between Twitter and Facebook, has on the one hand the complexity of being able to have rich stuff going on, commenting, etc., that Facebook does. On the other hand, has no such thing as privacy set. So you cannot send an audience on Sina Weibo, but it is, well, you always have to log in to read anything. So it's quite interesting how the Chinese solution to what we call social media is quite different from the solution which we have in the West, based on that ultimately it's based on, you know, self-censorship, etc. So lots to be said about this. Thank you for sharing this story.
Okay. Ours is about the reaction time of a world event and how in 5 minutes the ripple effect, and how what context and what culture you're in affects how you react to it in your circle of friends. And so we would enlist, like, you know, 1,000 people, 10,000 people around the globe, go and film. So probably take a little bit of money. But we would either fabricate a world event and see how the reaction time comes, or we would wait for that moment, such as, you know, like Michael Jackson dying, Osama bin Laden, any sort of election, and film and document the world event and that sliver of time, that 4 minutes, split screen, do all the different things where you can kind of analyze and see how the different culture affects how you react to it. And so it'd just be kind of a little world documentary on that, those 5 minutes. So, yeah. In 1 minute.
To some degree, you can already do this by looking at the tweet stream that Twitter firehose in response to an event and seeing how that propagates. A student at Stanford did, after the Japanese reactor accident, did something like that on Twitter. And it was just an amazing visualization of how things spread.
I think the interesting thing you'd get is if you were filming, or they could do it, that offline, their comment to the comment, comment to the post what they're saying out loud, you could get a world leader to be involved in that, so you could see how, you know, hierarchy of structure of their status in life and how they respond differently versus just a Twitter stream of that. So,
all right, you now know the routine. The green piece of paper goes there, and where's the microphone? Who wants the microphone? All right.
Thank you.
Oh. I'll take it, and then I can just pass it down that way.
Oh, okay.
If that's all right.
Okay, so this is a story of connection. Not too long ago, actually, my role model, friend, and mentor in advertising gave me my first break in advertising past. And, you know, this was several years back, and there was some distance since then. But the day she passed, I was able to go to visit her Facebook page and kind of go backwards to see the moments of her struggle with pancreatic cancer. And backwards to happy moments that she had with her family, mother, daughter, friendships, post interactions. So it was like, I thought that was a very emotionally powerful story to tell. And, you know, I was able to kind of connect with her, even though she had passed, backwards in time, not forwards, but backwards, all the way up until the time where she was happy and didn't even know she had cancer. So I connected with her, you know, beyond the realm of time in a very unique and interesting way. At the very end, I showed my mother, I shared with her, she's a first generation in the U.S. immigrant, this whole story of her son's role model. And she thanked her on Facebook. I'm actually choking off a little bit. She thanked her on Facebook for giving her son a break.
Our table already went, but I was inspired by all these stories. I thought of two other ones. One of them is a man in Minneapolis, where I'm from, who has gone missing. And over the last few weeks, I keep seeing all these posts in my friend's feed about the same man. I don't know who he is, but his name seemed familiar. So I started tracking and noticed that I actually know a lot of other people that know this man, and that they've been posting. They made an event for it, and they've been posting in the stream, like where he was last seen, or different stories and anecdotes that they're trying to piece together and figure out where he is. So it's kind of powerful to see how that's playing out. And then one other example is, so my boyfriend and I live together, but we're not married. So we're like investigating this pact that we're making with each other about our lives together and how much like we want to intertwine our lives together. And it's interesting how sharing devices or connecting our devices to the cloud is like helping us investigate our like trust in each other and how much information we share. And like he's actually receiving my notes from this conference, and he's like, I feel like I'm learning alongside you. So interesting. And we like always leave our Facebook pages and email accounts open, like just because, I don't know, we're lazy and nothing to hide, I guess. So it's just interesting how much we're learning about each other's lives and our past lives, our histories, through this connectivity.
Is which tables have not gone yet? Just a quick cross check here.
Hi. So yeah, we had a few different ideas, but I think the one thing that we have that no one's really talked about is the idea of social memory. And you know, as we become increasingly dependent on social media and digital media to document our lives, you know, are we overly reliant on that, and are we losing something in that process? You know, I mean, it kind of, as you go back in your Facebook timeline or your Instagram, you know, are we dependent on that media to, you know, remember things that happen in our lives, and are we remembering it in a different way than we have before? You know, in some ways, you know, it's kind of our, it's our new oral history. I can just talk louder, sorry.
That's all right, because I think your mic just died, so you want to
talk. Okay. So I don't know how much you guys heard, but yeah, you know, so in some ways, social media is kind of our generation's oral history. So, you know, I'm curious about how we understand ourselves, and is there anything lost in that process as we're using social media to, you know, serve as our memory, and you know, it, from story sense. You know, I was really thinking about kind of usual suspects with social media. Everything that, you know, happens in this world has been documented by somebody. But you know, what are the different perspectives, and you know, how people are, you know, interpret the same thing in different ways, and how that might create conflict, or also kind of help to serve unify us in different ways as well.
Okay.
Last team.
Okay.
I'm going to use the other. Is this working?
Perfect.
Does that work?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll just talk really quickly because I know this is almost over, but just another kind of story along the lines of people meeting friends and everything. About 6 years ago, my friend and I were trying to get Arcade Fire concert tickets on Craigslist, and we were bidding with a guy, and he had the tickets, and he was kind of told us, well, I have like three different sets of people bidding for the tickets, so what are you going to give me? What are you going to give me? So we actually told him, well, if you give it to us instead of the other people, we'll meet you when we get the tickets, and we'll have a drink. So we ended up meeting him out and having drinks, and then, funny enough, we ended up going to the concert together, and then I actually dated him for a short time. And I'm not dating him anymore, but the funny thing is now, so it's, I think it was 6 or 7 years ago, and now we're still really good friends, and I've met his friends, and he's met my friends, and all of that. And then just a funny thing, I actually like to tell people when we're out together that we met on, I forgot what it's called, but it's the section that closed down after that, after the Craigslist killer. Yes. So I like to tell people when we're out that we met through Casual Encounters, even though it's not really true. But yeah, I think it's just a, you know, cool testimony to bringing people together. And now my friends are his friends, and it's a whole different way to like meet people now through the internet.
Thank you. Did everybody who wanted to say something get to say something, or do we have any team left?
We haven't gone.
Yeah, we haven't
gone.
Oh, sorry. It's okay. As always, the closest.
Right. So we took a very literal sort of approach to the brief of how's the world changed since social data has come about. And so we just basically took, created sliding doors for the social data age. So you take the notion of following a person for a year and you show how their life is different than if you'd followed them in a year in a world where they didn't have social media. So one version, they've got Foursquare and they catch that person who they've been trying to meet and it changes their future versus the one who doesn't. You know, you have Google Maps traffic data and so you go the right way, the wrong way, and you don't miss your flight and what corresponds and changes. You know, you're trying to start a company. In the one world, you've got Kickstarter and it funds, and another, you can never find the right investors. And just showing how social data, all these little things over time, fundamentally changes our existence. And so that was the concept for the movie.
Okay, I know that you could go on forever with many, many, many more good ideas. So what I've put out here on the screen is the little YouTube channel, youtube.com/socialdatarevolution, where we have some clips, the Facebook page. Then I will put the slides up on weigand.com, my website /speaking. If you want to email me, aweigand@stanford.edu. If you have ideas about the film, please send them to ideas@socialdatafilm.com. And I think all is left for me is to thank you for a great session and hope that I'll be staying in touch with some of you afterwards. Thank you. And let it turn over to Mark.